Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you all. It's good to be back home. There's still no place like home. Ask someone why they're not a devoted follower of Jesus, and you'll usually get one of two answers. Either they've been hurt by a church in some way, or they'll say that they're just too disappointed with God to put their trust in Him. You don't have to look very hard to find a lot of people who've been disappointed with God. Sometimes they'll say it in different ways. They'll say, it just didn't work for me. Or, how could a good God allow what happened? Or, I prayed and nothing happened. I needed an answer. I needed a job. I needed to be healed, and I didn't get what I needed. And if we told the truth, there's probably not a person here who hasn't at some point in their life at least been tempted to be disappointed with God. Disappointment is the dark side of hope. That's why there's some people afraid to hope. Whether disappointment comes suddenly and swiftly, or whether it grows over time as year after year our hopes once again fail to happen, disappointment can be a kind of slow death. It's hard to deal with. It kills our morale, it kills our joy, it kills our energy, and it can easily kill our spiritual life. Did you know that when people get burned out, it's more likely caused by disappointment than because they were working hard? The Bible says this about what happens when our hope is disappointed. From Proverbs 13:12, delayed hope makes one sick at heart. So we're dealing with disappointment with God. Now, the first book of the Bible, called Genesis, has a story about a man named Joseph. He was the youngest of 11 brothers who had different mothers, a complicated family. When he was young, he had a dream that one day his father, his parents, and his brothers would all bow down to him. Now, it happened that he was his father's favorite, and his brothers hated him for it, and all the more when he told them his dream. One day, they plotted to kill him, but at the last minute, they didn't. Instead, they sold him into slavery. He was taken to Egypt, where he was forced to serve a high Egyptian official. Things there got better. Eventually, he was chief steward over all of that his master owned. He was the head slave. And then his master's wife tried to seduce him, and when he refused, she accused him of trying to rape her, and so he ended up in prison. In prison, through an amazing series of events, he ended up with interpreting a dream for a man who was a personal attendant to the Pharaoh, and then some years later, the Pharaoh had a dream, and he interpreted the Pharaoh's dream, and the long story short, he ended up in charge of all of Egypt, directly under the Pharaoh, particularly in charge of saving up food from 7 years of plenty, which were going to be followed by 7 years of famine. Because of Joseph, Egypt had food when the famine came, and soon his brothers came looking for food. Long story short, he revealed himself to his brothers and brought his whole family down to Egypt, and they survived. Now, altogether, Joseph was a slaver in prison for 13 years before his fortunes turned. Can you imagine how he must have felt during those 13 years? It's almost impossible to imagine, you know, the trip down to Egypt, having been sold into slavery by his own brothers, thinking like, why did you give me that dream? Like, how could you do this to me, God? How could this be happening? And then, as if that weren't bad enough, he now ends up in prison. Like, God, what are you doing? Like, I'm going the wrong direction. Like, the opposite from all of my dreams and hopes. This isn't fair. And I'm sure he cried out to God many times, why is this happening to me? But in the end, apparently he worked through his disappointments to a deeper faith in God. Because when his brothers came, and when they discovered that he was now the head official in Egypt, except for the Pharaoh, they were afraid, and they came to apologize to him for their evil deeds. And this is interesting. Genesis 50, we're going to put this part on the screen, verses 19 to 20. Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. I can't take God's place. Even though you planned evil against me, God planned good to come out of it. This was to keep many people alive, as he is doing now." So Joseph overcame 13 years of disappointment with God and came out to this place. And so today's question is, how can we overcome our own disappointment with God? How can we get where Joseph did? Well, first of all, we need to consider the reasons why we get disappointed with God. So five reasons why we are disappointed with God. First reason, we really just have the complete wrong expectations. We think that God is maybe our celestial Santa Claus or our fairy godmother. It turns out he's not. It's a whole different thing with him. There's a woman named Wanda Alger. She wrote a blog about her wrong expectations of God and how that led her to disappointment. She says, "I never thought I would feel that way about God, but after years of service to the Lord, that's exactly where I ended up last winter, disillusioned and doubtful of God's provision, protection, and promise. I had started out with such passion and determination to be faithful to his call and extend the kingdom through my gifts and vision. In the end, I felt hollow and empty as my hopes dried up and dreams faded. Things weren't turning out the way I expected. I wanted to quit and never look back. It just didn't seem worth it. And it was at this point I realized just how far I had drifted. And as I laid out my complaint before the Lord, I saw the starkness of my soul, the ambition, the pride, the self-centeredness, the jealousy, the need for approval and significance. And I saw that the root cause of my depression and disappointment with God was due to my own expectations, both of God and myself. I determined to be a world changer, but now began to see how my own private world had crumbled and fallen. We get disappointed when our prayers are not answered the way we want. We assume certain things about God and his plans for us, and when they don't play out the way we hoped for, we point a finger at him and accuse him of betrayal. We not only expect him to dole out our rewards for our good behavior, but we also assume that he will meet our requests on our terms. And that is the way it is, folks. But you know, it might come as a surprise to you, but if you actually read God's book, you will see that he has never promised us an easy life. In fact, pretty much the opposite. You know, in this world you will have tribulation, it says. He never promised that we would be rich in this world's stuff. He never promised to be our Santa Claus. It's not his job to make sure we always have a parking place. God's main desire is to develop your character and help you grow up spiritually, and that's a whole different thing. You know, back in 1981, my wife and I took a little bit of a hiatus from being here in Evanston to start another church down in the Humboldt Park neighborhood. And pretty much my whole life, I'd succeeded everything. Whatever I turned to worked until I went to Humboldt Park, because nobody was coming to Jesus. The church wasn't happening. And it wasn't what I expected. And I, not only that, but I felt God had left me, like I couldn't feel his presence. And I went into a deep depression. I thought I had gone there to plant the church, but it turned out I was the project. Because God was bringing me to the end of myself. And out of that has come a lifetime's worth of fruitfulness. done not by what I can do, but what God can do when I've come to the end of myself, which is so much more. It was a more valuable experience than success ever would have been. It was, I count it as one of the best times in my life, even though at the time it seemed the worst time in my life. Well, what have you been expecting from God? Is it really an expectation based on something he really agreed to, or is it just something you came up with yourself? Are you really just expecting God to cater to your personal goals? What God has promised us is that he will give us himself. We all have certain things we want from God, but when we don't get what we want, will God himself be enough? My friend Rich Nathan, he's a pastor in Ohio, put it this way. Hope is not believing that God will give us a certain outcome because we believe. Hope is believing that the infinitely wise, infinitely loving, infinitely perfect, infinitely satisfying God will be enough for me, whether I get the thing I want in my life or not. That is a hope that will never be disappointed. So sometimes we're disappointed just because we got the wrong expectations. Sometimes it's that we have the wrong person. Our problem is we're disappointed with the wrong person. Maybe we're really disappointed with our parents, and it somehow becomes God's fault. Or we're disappointed with our boss, and we try to stick God with our disappointment in other people. Or sometimes we have the wrong God. Some of us have gotten a faulty picture of who God really is that can feed our disappointment. Maybe, you know, in your heart of hearts, your picture of God is a God who is always angry and really doesn't like us very much. And every time something happens that's just a little bit negative, we take it as confirmation that God is a disappointment. You know, a very popular distortion is that God is a God of rules. He's all about keeping the rules. And if you play by the rules, you get rewarded. And if you don't, you get punished. It's a kind of kindergartner's view of God. And then, of course, what inevitably happens is that if you keep the rules, but you don't get rewarded the way you thought, then you're disappointed. But that's not actually the real God that was revealed through history and that was shown to us in his book. And that Jesus demonstrated to us when he came. That's not who he really is. So if you're disappointed, it might be worth investigating whether you've even got the right God in mind. Third, sometimes we're disappointed because we simply can't see the end. You know, during those years when Joseph was a slave, he couldn't have in his wildest imagination see how it would turn out. Like, his story is like almost verging on impossible. You don't go from slave in prison to high official in the whole land, except for Joseph. And he could have been disappointed, but it all looked different once he saw how it ended. That's how it's been for me. You know, we're sitting here today in this wonderful building. This building was a cause of a lot of disappointment in God from my part. Well, not this one, really. It was the other one. This was the resolution. After years of searching and praying, you know, we bought this building up in North Evanston. And we went before the church council for a zoning variance, and they turned us down. And in that moment, I felt intense disappointment in God. And for about the next 5 years, God and I were having a running argument. Something on the lines of, you give those folks, the Presbyterians, they got a church, they got a building, the Catholics got a building, even the Buddhists have a building. The Mormons got a building, even the cults, you have a building, but for us, nothing. That was how it went. Kind of repeatedly. And I felt that somehow maybe God was punishing me. You know, that I somehow had failed him. eventually on sabbatical, God began to heal my heart. And of course, the problem was I couldn't see the end. Because in the end, at the very end, God gave us this. The biggest building in town with the most parking in town. Like, we got the best deal of everybody on that long list that I complained about. And I remember when it happened, I thought, could we have gotten here any other way? Was there like an easier way to get here? And I realized, no. My disappointment was all because I doubted God without seeing the end. See, God sometimes works things out in a more circuitous way than we think he should. He has his own approaches to how he's going to fulfill his plans in our life. And because we can't see how it's going to work out, we get disappointed. You know, and of course, for sure, we can't even see the next life. You know, we're very focused on this life, you know. But for God, the next life is more present and more real than this. We don't see what might have been. We don't see what's coming. We're just like two-year-olds in the grocery store who want every piece of candy that can be seen. And our loving Heavenly Father says, no, you can't have that. And like a two-year-old, we scream bloody murder and tell him he's a terrible father. But we don't have to stay there. We can come back to our Heavenly Father and trust him to take care of us to all the end. And number four, sometimes we are disappointed in God because we don't understand the war of life. In this life, we are in a war, in a broken world. And in a world of war, bad things happen. Just because it's a war, just because the world is broken. And life, but life, folks, is not the same as God. And it's really important to understand that. Life's not the same as God. There's a writer named Phil Yancey who was working on a book on disappointment with God, and so he decided to go see his friend who he thought was the most faith-filled person who should have been disappointed with God that he knew. He was a good man, he says. He had been trained as a psychotherapist, but he gave up a lucrative practice and started to work in the inner city among poor people. Yet after he did that, his life started to fall apart. The first thing that happened was his wife came down with a case of breast cancer. She started taking chemotherapy treatments, and that affected his whole family. She was always tired and often fell sick. Douglas, that's his name, had to pick up a lot of work around the house. The spot of cancer spread and appeared on her lungs, and her life was seriously threatened. He had to deal with that, and then in the middle of his pain and the suffering that that involved, they were involved in a serious traffic accident. They weren't doing anything wrong. They were driving down a road, and a drunken driver crossed the median and smashed into their car head-on. His 12-year-old daughter went through the windshield, was badly lacerated in his face. His wife was hurt, and the worst injuries were to him. He hit his head on the dashboard, and it caused trouble with his vision. One of his eyes wouldn't cooperate, and he was seeing double, and he couldn't walk. The worst thing for him was that he couldn't read. He loved to read. So I decided to interview him, and I called him up and scheduled an appointment. We met for breakfast, and we sat and chatted, and after breakfast had been served, I said, well, I'm writing a book about disappointment with God, and I thought, of all the people I know, you have the right to be disappointed with God. You're right at the top of the list. Tell me, what would you say to people who are disappointed with God? And he thought for a minute and stroked his beard and finally looked at me and he said, you know, Philip, I don't think I've ever been disappointed with God. This was a great shock to me. I was amazed. I had specifically chosen him because I thought of all the people I knew, he was the one most likely to be disappointed, even angry at God, because of the unfairness he had seen. And I asked, how can this be? And he said to me, you know, Philip, I learned a long time ago, and especially through this accident, not to confuse God with life. Is life unfair? You bet. My life has been unfair. What has happened to my wife, what has happened to my daughter, what has happened to me, it's unfair. But I think God feels exactly the same way. I think he's grieved and hurt by what that drunk driver did as much as I am. Don't confuse God with life, he said. as I read the Bible, especially the Old Testament, I notice that those people were ever able to separate the physical reality of their lives from the spiritual reality of their relationship with God. So folks, life is not fair. But remember, God's will is not yet done on earth as it is in heaven. Not everything that happens is God's will. And when life is not fair, he's grieving with us. Finally, number five, I think we're disappointed with God because we can't accept that we're just not God. It really just boils down to wanting to be our own God, or at least be able to order the real God around and tell him how to do it. And of course, as long as that desire is working in us, we're going to be prone to disappointment. The key is simply to accept the fact that we're not God and to submit to the true and living God and call out to him and trust him to lead our lives. There's life on the other side of disappointment. Some of you this morning, I'm sure, are fighting crushing disappointment. But you don't have to be sick at heart forever, and you don't have to give up on hope. So if we're disappointed with God, what can we do? Well, number one, pray back your disappointment to God. Just tell him. Psalm 10, verse 1. Why are you so distant, Lord? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? About a third of all the Psalms, which are kind of the prayer book, they're, you know, tells you how to pray, about a third of them are like this. They're like disappointed prayers. God wants us to bring our disappointments to him. It's the first step back to God. It's just to say, God, I'm disappointed. I'm upset. Why did it? You know, just pour it out. And when we do this, that's when we find that God is close to us and often grieving with us. He cares so much about the brokenness in our world that he sent his son Jesus to die so that one day all things could be renewed. He cares about your disappointments and your sorrows, so bring them to him and you will find comfort. Number two, surrender your expectations. If the reason you're disappointed is because of wrong expectations, the solution is pretty obvious. Surrender your expectations to God. Lay them down. Let it go. Surrender your life to him, to his purposes. He'll meet you there. Long ago, I said, all right, God, from now on, regardless of what I ask for, our agreement is that you will do in my life what you want. And I'm going to submit to that and say yes to that. And he's been very faithful to maintain the agreement, even when I'm asking for something else. And I'm not sorry about it, because in the end, he's been right every time. It's always been good in the end. So surrender your expectations. Number three, remember the goodness of God. You know, when I was struggling with disappointment, I discovered that I first needed to recover gratitude. And it was hard at first. At the beginning, it was sort of like, okay, through gritted teeth, I'm thankful that I can walk. We'll start with that. You know, I'm thankful that I can read. You know, just very basic things. Okay, I'm thankful that I have a family. You know, just, I couldn't be thankful for the church for a long time. But I started off there and started building thankfulness into my life, like a daily thing. Like, I'm going to take time every day and be thankful to God, like taking a vitamin or something, or medicine. And it was medicine to the soul. Eventually, the disappointment became lighter, and eventually, I was able to give thanks for all of my life, and the way, and the church, and everything else, and I began to remember that God was good to me, even in the midst of my disappointment. So gratitude will overcome your disappointment if you practice it, and it will set your heart free. Number four, and the band can start making their way back up, look for God's redemption. God has a powerful way of redeeming, that is, buying back the bad things that happen and turning them into something good. It doesn't mean that he intended the bad things. It doesn't mean that the bad things weren't bad things. But it means that God still nevertheless can turn it, use it, to turn it out for good. And that's what Joseph had to say. He said to his brothers, what you intended for evil was used by God to bring much good for many people. He didn't say it wasn't evil. It was an evil thing they did, but God used it. God will use it. Romans 8:28 tells us, we know that all things work together for the good of those who love God, those whom he has called according to his plan. God will work things out for good in your life, even the evil things, even the tragedies. He can bring good out of it if you will give yourself to him. Chicago businessman Horatio Spatford lived here in Chicago over a century ago. He was one of our fellow Chicagoans, and he was a wealthy man. He had a son and four daughters. But in 1871, his son died of a disease, and then shortly after came the Chicago fire, and that ruined him financially. He was no longer wealthy. In 1873, he had planned to travel to Europe with his family on the SS Ville de Havre, but sent his family ahead because he was delayed on business. While crossing the Atlantic, that ship sunk rapidly after a collision with another ship, and all four of his daughters died. His wife survived and sent him the now famous telegram saying simply, "Saved alone." Shortly afterwards, as he traveled to meet his grieving wife, he was inspired to write these words as his ship passed near where his daughters had died. Words which have become part of a very famous song. It goes like this. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul. So if you will turn to God in your disappointment, you too will be able to say, no matter what happens, that it is well with your soul. Why not turn to him right now? Let's stand and respond to God.